When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Telling you, bro. What's been happening, bro?
Not too much.
Still hitting more Peggy O's.
Hey everybody, Shane Terrio here. Thanks for joining me on the Riff Raff today. How's everybody doing? I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for asking. Everybody having a good summer? Well, summer's over. It's been hot, really hot in LA. Going to New Orleans, it's actually cooler in New Orleans than LA. Weird. Anyway, a couple of quick things. My YouTube channel, I put a lot of time into this in the last month. I've posted about 10 videos up there. Everything from instructional things, tone tips, behind the scenes, Daryl's House with Billy Gibbons. Check it out. I've been getting some great comments on it. Another thing, by popular demand, I have replenished the supply of New Orleans funk guitar books. It's been sold out for a long time. I have a fresh batch of autographed copies on my website. If you're interested, it's a bestseller, a perennial favorite, that book is. I think you'll like it. New Orleans funk guitar. A couple live gigs coming up. I'm doing a thing at the Bitter End in New York City on December 5th with Osnoy. Little duo gig if you're interested and you're in New York. So let's get to today's guest. My guest today is Tomo Fujita. And Tomo is a fantastic guitar player, a ridiculous rhythm guitar player. We met, we were only sort of new friends. We met in Boston, as you'll hear, a couple months ago. And Tomo is, you probably know him, he's got tons of social media followers. And he teaches at the Berklee College of Music. He's a professor. He's a solo artist. He's a nice guy. Great player. I think you'll enjoy this hang. It's a part one of part two, and I'll be posting part two soon. Hope you enjoy. Tomo-sensei, I just met you a couple weeks ago, and you were so nice to drive me around Boston and give me a tour. And I know you're at Berklee and you're manichi isogashi. You get a lot of students.
Yeah,
so thanks for joining.
Of course. Yeah, but that was fun because first, you know, I've been living in Boston many years, but a lot of Bostonian actually didn't know around because many things famous, you know, museum to whatever, you know. But then, as you see, Boston is a lot one way. Even just go to airport is crazy, you know. So
it's like they like the cops say over there, it's wicked easy. I'm going to give you directions. It is never wicked,
wicked easy,
easy,
but not easy. No. And the people talk so fast. Northeast, you know.
But yeah, I love your playing, and we follow each other on Instagram,
and
you always post such great, inspiring things, and we both love rhythm, great rhythm guitar style. So I thought it'd be fun to talk, you know.
Yeah, of course. You know why I really got into more rhythm guitar than soloing?
Why is that?
Because I went to Berklee, and I saw many players much better than me. And then everybody, I went to Berklee like late 80s. Like this is about almost end of 86, 87. So when Scott Henderson was really peak, you know, releasing album. And I was really into Scott Henderson, John Scofield, Pat Metheny, Mike Stern. Just like everybody, I transcribing stuff. And funny, once I transcribe something, somebody also doing more things. And that's where I felt like first year, you know, I was trying to do something. Oh, okay, this is not good because so many players doing something. And I was always into rhythm guitar, you know, because I really felt I don't really have a really good time feel from Japan, you know. So stereotype myself, oh, I'm a Japanese guy, so I can't really have a groove, you know. So I had to practice the metronome. I had to listen to these records. So I ended up, I decided, okay, I'm going to focus on more rhythm. I did.
Yeah.
And you have something similar to what I do because your rhythm skills so keen at the detail, the muting. I love how you mute, you know, both hands. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you play really clean. Sometimes on purposely, I can see very loose. I'm sure that you got from New Orleans, you know, that something,
yeah,
something a little laid back, you know what I mean?
Well,
almost like an imperfection that you are making perfect. You know what I mean? So you know, it's almost like looseness. You have to really learn, figure it out. Sometimes people has that looseness naturally, but you are professional. You have to get that looseness every time, right?
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, I think that, like you said, that New Orleans rhythm style, that is a little more laid back, and like you said, it's a little looser,
right,
a little bit sloppier. But you can't really try to do that. It just kind of how it is.
Yeah.
But the way you play is, I love that stuff too. That Al McKay, Earth, Wind, Fire.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, Ray Parker, that kind of thing. The real tight. I love that stuff.
Yeah. Just because I listened so much Earth, Wind, and Fire when I was 16, 18, around there.
Mm.
And Chic, Nile Rodgers,
yeah,
always. And I have no idea the part. I didn't know the parts. I didn't know the parts. But I know the tightness of the band. That's why I think I developed really, really tight muting skill, because I'm listening bam. And then later I noticed, okay, I was actually doing wrong because I'm just playing too tight. I have to have a little looseness for other musicians, you know.
Yeah.
Tightness stuff is good for students to understand how to use, you know, left hand mute and right hand skill. Yeah. So, Ray Parker Jr. is amazing. He does a lot.
And in Japan, sorry to interrupt, but
yeah,
Ray
sure.
Parker Jr., David T. Walker,
Cornell
Dupree, those are the people I see still when I go to Japan, you know.
Yeah.
Where is Tower Records? They still have Shibuya.
Shibuya? Maybe.
Yeah.
Yep.
They have like whole stations of those guys are still. So
exactly.
My point is do you think Japanese people, first of all, you said that you don't have rhythm originally because you're Japanese. I don't agree with that at all, but there's some really funky musicians in Japan.
Yeah, of course, yes.
But do you, there's something about that style and that funkiness and that kind of rhythm. And Japanese musicians love it and they gravitate towards it in a special way, you know?
Yeah.
Would you say that's true?
That's true. And then, several months ago, you know, Guitar Magazine in Japan, they were focusing blues music in Japan. And there is a band, especially Kansai, which is, you know, Osaka, Kyoto. They had a band called Breakdown. Two guitars, you know, and bass and drummer. Another one called West Road Blues Band. Those were really, really you know, strong when, you know, early 70s. Mm. I think they, one of band opened B.B. King.
Mm.
Yeah. But they are so into blues.
Yeah.
And that's, I listened to those guys when I was kids. So like, Breakdown, they start with slow blues every time when I see them. And then I have no idea about why their sound is so thick, big, because a lot of feeling, you know?
Yeah.
No effect, just a guitar and the bass. And like, I think I brought up in Kyoto, Japan. So Kyoto has a lot of blues influence. I don't know why. On R&B. That's why Cornell Dupree, Eric Gale, stuff, the band, and those guys were really well known. Yeah, it's really cool.
You ever notice Cornell Dupree, And I don't mean this I don't mean it as an insult, but it, like his plan, his a lot of times it sounds a little out of tune, but it always so much feel to it. It adds to the character, you know.
Yeah.
Like when he'll do these little, you know, like it's always a little sharp, but it's got that feel, you know. You know, it's just so good. I mean, Ry Cooder does that sometimes too.
Where... Yeah, I think those guys, you know, tune up a guitar once before they on the bonus thing, right?
I think
And then it's a little bit out of tune, they just push a little bit. See, nowadays, everybody has a clip tuner and then perfectly in tune, which is a little bit too much sometimes, you know? So that's why Cornell like that exactly. Also, I did. He does a lot of jazzy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, those little fill. Yeah.
Right. Out of tune, but you know, like so like. It's just adding to the feel.
It's adding to the sauce, the seasoning. Yeah.
Exactly. And then, like you said, little loose.
Right, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I love about his playing because I never heard he's using any effect.
I think he might have used a phaser later on in his life.
Yeah, a little bit, right.
Maybe somebody in Japan gave him a whole pedal board, Ibanez, and he just would step on some of them, you know.
Yeah, but the way he does it.
Yeah.
So he does a little B.B. King, Albert King, yeah. You know, he does a little thing like that. Yeah. Well, funny part is, you know, I've been teaching at the Berkeley, and a lot of young people come, right? And do you know Cornell Dupree or David T. Walker? No idea.
Seems to be in Japan, man. Way more popular than here, I think. Overall,
exactly.
I think,
it's
you know.
It's really funny, yeah.
Yeah, like Eric Gale.
Because a younger musician hire these guys. Mm. And then these, you know, pop musician, you know, they play at, you know, Tokyo Dome or something big and bring these guys, you know, and make a live recording or something like that. It's crazy. Yeah. But I love the rhythm.
Yeah. The first time I ever went to Japan, actually, it's behind me. That poster is Neville Brothers.
Yes.
I think it was Sun Plaza. Or I don't remember. There was a little tour.
Okay.
But I just put that. I just found that poster and put it up last week.
Right.
And the first time I ever went there was, I was just blown away by.
So what year did you go to Japan?
That was 96, 97, 96, I think. Yeah, late 96. And
interesting. That's when I start going back to Japan, like 95 or 6, because I came to Berkeley November 1986, Japan. Maybe 95 I went back once. Yeah.
And then when you left, what year was it when you left? 80
Yeah, November 86.
So you left in 86. And Paul Gilbert was on the cover of Young Guitar magazine.
Oh, yeah.
And then you go back in like 98, and Paul Gilbert's on the cover of Young Guitar magazine.
True.
Every time I go over there, it's like the same.
That's true. You know, Steve Vai.
Marty Friedman.
Marty Friedman. Those guys are always popular. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And plus, Japan, some people love, you know, blues and funk, but then some people really into that. You know, whammy bar, distortion, screaming thing. You know? Yeah, that's very cool.
Well, I'm sure we could talk about so many things, but the rhythm guitar stuff. Maybe we should talk a little bit more about that, and then I want to hear about your solo records. I know you have a few solo records, and your teaching. So, so what do you think? Like you see a lot of students come in to Berkeley, and plus you teach students all over the world. Is rhythm guitar one of the more important things, or you think people still are more into soloing, like the kids?
Well, kids really into right to the soloing, honestly. Mm-hmm. they don't really understand how important the fun to play rhythm guitar. Mm-hmm. Just because anybody, using a backing track or YouTube or download something, these days. So what happened is it's almost normal. People just wake up, turn the computer, look for backing track. Oh, I like this one. And then plug into computer. And they're all plugging, all the, effect is there. You just click, click, click. You got the sound. And then right away you press and you hear the backing track. And then, if it's a Thrill's Gone, it says B minor. Okay. Like that. He's just going on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And then add more reverb, add more distortion. They don't really hear any rhythm because duration is always, never stopped.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's like typical people's experience. Unless somebody point out, okay, you should do this, you should do this, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then so it's really funny part is sometimes, okay, first lesson, I want to hear you play E blues. Is that okay? Yeah. All right, I'm going to play rhythm guitar just like this. And I want you to play solo. Like that. Okay, here we go. A one, two, three. And I watch. Most people start playing like this, looking at the fretboard. Like that, mm-hmm. Everywhere. And I listen to, I'm not really put people down, but just as a typical, guitar player syndrome, 12 frets, open strings, nothing happened in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And then not four in the chords. So this is really interesting. Okay, my turn. I play, solo. Sometimes people say, what key are we in?
Really?
I told you, E. Oh, yeah. Like that. Not really aware what chords is moving. One goes to 4 or 5 or 12. And then, you understand. Okay, this is here again. And then this is most... first, I thought this is like, problem of young kids. But ended up almost like universal problem. This is what young kids... 1, 2, 3, 4... Difficult to do. I love kids play. So what's happening? 1, 1, 4, 4.
Oh, I see. The form has changed.
So that people don't catch it like 1, 4, 1, 1 or 1, 1, 1, 1 and they go to 4. They don't have that concept. Just because they don't even know the bass line. How about this one? Apparently, you can hear tuba phrase.
Right.
Or chromaticism.
Right.
You know those languages because you heard that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of kids only listen backing track or somebody screaming solo, right? So they don't have like... they just don't have a clue, about the song form. Because song form is already ready to play. That's the problem.
I see.
Not like when we were kids. We're figuring out together.
Yeah, hey, getting in a room and playing with guys.
You're wrong, I'm right, that kind of deal, No, mm-hmm. no, you're wrong. Oh, okay, They don't have that kind of discussion. Or hit the wall. Because answer, you Google, yeah. You know, how to play blues, Google minor pentatonic. Or minor pentatonic mixing with major pentatonic. Occasionally, mixed Lydian scale and adding chromaticism, like that. What's that mean? That's a word, that's not music, you know? So sometimes I have to teach kids, like students, how to learn, how to listen. But we can't really make them feel bad, you know? So yeah. I have to make them try. I have to hear. So I just try and I explain and they understand, you know?
Yeah, and even a simple, you know, even something simple like that, there's still a lot going on. There's the coordination
exactly.
between two hands. There's the muting. There's the dynamics. And then there's the harmonic, you know, the 1-4, 1-4.
Right.
And I remember learning how to play that. And,
You
know, and it still feels good to play that, you know.
Exactly.
But there was a that in itself is rhythm guitar, like you're saying. That's almost a... It's almost a drum pattern too. It's everything.
Yeah.
And there's variation.
So that's
all that
what
kind
I
of
like
stuff.
You're playing because you really do, you know. You use that bass line and, you know, drum kind of accent, you know. Like, for example, like you do often, like, you know, that. You do.
Oh,
naturally.
Yeah.
A lot of kids don't have that idea. Like, that kind of thing, they just don't know. They almost know, they don't know nothing about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Just because I told you, like, YouTube, if you Google, there's backing track. So
right.
Almost like they don't need to practice that.
Well, one thing I will say about rhythm guitar, like I've been a working professional guitar player for a long time now, and rhythm guitar, I mean, everybody knows this now, but I'll say it, that's probably easily 80% of what you do unless you're going to, you know, unless you're Pat Metheny or somebody like that. But if you're a working player, like, you know, doing recording sessions, working mm-hmm. with singers, song, mm-hmm. playing standard songs, regardless of style.
Right.
The rhythm guitar, I mean, you're not going to really get hired unless, you know, Dream Theater is looking for a guitar player and that kind of style.
Yeah. Or,
is different. And even that has some, has a lot of heavy rhythm
exactly.
stuff. You know?
Still, they have to know the
So it's a very important thing. And it's just interesting because I notice you can make people feel a certain way playing rhythm guitar that people that aren't musicians or guitar players, they gravitate. Uh-huh. It's kind of the closest thing we have to, I've always been jealous that a piano player can sit down and it sounds like an orchestra,
right.
But that's the closest thing we have is like rhythm guitar.
Yeah.
Soloing,
still,
you know.
Still like, you know, you can do chord melody or, you know,
So what's one quick tip that you give people learning rhythm guitar? Like one I used to teach was syncopated, like a six. You know, you just pretty theoretical, but it is an exercise.
You take
16ths and then you kind of write like an X here there.
And
then you start accenting certain.
Yeah.
Is there something similar that you teach your students or?
Yeah, well, like I usually test it like this sometimes. You know, like even like this. Some people cannot do it because mm-hmm. they don't have alternate picking or mm-hmm. you know, this feel. So they go like this.
Yeah.
You know, like that, right? You know, yeah. So that's usually, it's not about guitar. So I have, you know, teach them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To get the internal clock going.
Yeah. Then ended up, I have to teach them. Like, So sometimes, so I make them all sing actually.
And that's a strumming pattern which you're singing, right?
Yeah, because this way, without the guitar, first we can check time issue or hand issue. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So usually, it's not about this issue. It's about internal rhythm that they don't have. They don't have that yet. And after that, sometimes, okay, even power chord. So then technique, like, you know, just press something and everything else mute. Sometimes even a very technical. Then show how not to press too much. Like a drum accent, sort of basically accent, mute, and all that stuff, you know, figure it out, and then just pick something that, you know, students need to work. So I don't have anything too much like, okay, I have to teach today ABC to everybody, you know what I mean? I have a bag of, you know, ideas, but then each person has different personality and different pace, so I have to really pick right one.
It depends on the student,
But at least a great part is, you know, since I taught John Mayer, I've known John Mayer teacher, Eric Plasma teacher, so a lot of people understand what I'm doing already because I have a, you know, Instagram and YouTube people watch. So they understand, it's a great part is they understand it, you know. In other words, not heavy metal guys who really want to study with me.
Right.
Somebody want to improve their rhythm skill, blues, guitar, and maybe jazz a little bit like that. And then that's how people take my lesson.
Well, what about, when did you do your first solo record? What was that, the 90s?
Yeah, well, solo records, I mean, first I made a demo. You know, cassette. That was like a 92, you know. And then real album is Put On Your Funk Face. And that's the one released on 1996.
And was that for a Japanese label or did you do it just yourself?
I did everything myself.
Okay.
Yeah. That, you know, always I had a, okay, this is about business thing. Always I felt like, okay, if I release from somebody, it seems okay in a few years, and if somebody buy that label, then all of a sudden your stuff is, you can't really control it.
Yeah.
I heard that about that a little bit, about, you know, a little bit jazz and the future. So when I released that, put in Funk Face, I just did everything by myself. And no covers, all original. Yeah, at least my brother-in-law is a lawyer, so copyrights and all that stuff. You know, so make sure I have an ASCAP and everything. You know, You know, name. So every time when I release records, I have a system to do that first. You know? And then 2001, around there, I believe, and I released Right Place, Right Time. And yes, same way, I just released everything myself. And then 2010, this is the one, Pure. Steve Gadd, Bernard Party, you know, and Will Lee.
Nobody good available? You had to call those guys?
I had to call those guys because I had to get. Yeah, so Steve, so that was my dream album because I was getting really good friends with Will Lee, so he called off and off. Then we did a tour in Japan, did some session in New York. So one occasion, I was talking to Will, saying, I have one dream. He said, what is that? Well, someday I want to record with you and Steve Gadd and those guys, you know, my drummers I love. But then I told him right away, but probably not able to do, because, I mean, Steve Gadd playing Eric Clapton, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And me, I'm just nobody. So, and then this is Will's answer. You never know. Never heard, just ask. Worst thing, they say no.
Yeah.
If you don't ask, worst thing, you never know.
That's true. Said, what do you have to leave?
So I asked him, you know, Will, can you ask Steve, what if he's interesting to play with me, you know, few songs? And Steve interested in it. And then what happened was, that was a 2007 or 8, around the March, I believe. And then Will gave me Steve Gadd's phone number, because Steve Gadd, he doesn't use cell phone. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, cell phone, like texting. You just, you know, talk, like, you know, talk guy, no computer. So I had to call him, shaking, you know, call him. And then he accept my offer. And he said, you know, I'm doing a rehearsal with Paul Simon. That's the around day. So, you know, I'm staying in New York. So I don't have to pay for the hotel and all that stuff. You know, because I have a budget, it's kind of low, you know, myself. So. And that's what we did. Mm-hmm. One night, three songs.
That's great, man, yeah.
Right. And then what happened is, oh my God, I had a opportunity to play with Steve Gadd, Will Lee, three songs. What can I do after that, right? So I have to kind of think, okay, next dream, burn out a party, because Cornel Dupree, teasing. I have to do that. I have to do slow blues. So I already have slow blues, you know, swing, shuffle, funk. I have to have that. So that's why I hired burn out a party.
Mm-hmm.
And that same year, like around like November, winter time. And funny part is, you know, studio, I was there setting up a drum set, you know, with a friend. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was Steve Gadd. Steve Gadd, he told me he can't bring a set. So we provide, you know, Yamaha set.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, Bernard Party, he lives in New Jersey. Or, you know, so I assume he's going to bring a drum set, right?
Mm-hmm.
I never asked him. So he showed up. We have problem, miscommunication, problem. It's not good mood. What's that? There's no drum set. What do you mean? I said. He said, always when I show up, drum set is ready to play or something.
Well, doesn't he have a cartage guy? He would have called, or you're supposed to just know that.
No, but he thought I just prepare everything.
But how does he even know that, you know, what kind of drums he wants?
Exactly. So anyway, but great part of the studio was owned by drum. So I asked him, can you set something he likes, you know? So we start, you know, put the drum set together. And he wasn't really good mood, because, you know, probably takes time, right, a little bit. Then he say, went out to get the soup and something like that, and then we hang out, yeah. And this is what happened. First one, I think we play slow blues. No. Well, anyway, so we're playing music, and we're playing blues. I made him so happy playing blues. So he just starts singing. You know, I was like, oh, I'm glad I can play blues, you know? Because we have a common, right?
Yeah.
You know, so that's already communicating through music. And everything went well. So we did that. Then what's next? Of course, I have many drummers I want to do. But if I want to do, okay, Steve Jordan. And that's actually next year. You know, took a little longer because that's the 2008, around there. Yes, around 2008. I think he was just recording with us, John Mayer.
Continuum
album. So right. I knew I could not get him so easy. Every time I call him, he said, I'm going to be in New York, I'm going to be here, there. Always I'm a few steps late.
Mm-hmm.
Then ended up, I said, can you do this, you know, New York? And then somehow we picked the march, you know, like that. But anyway, so we did it. Yeah.
That's great. I know what you go through. I've chased a few drummers like that myself on some of my records. Yeah, and it's really stressful to do it. But once you do it, it's like taking a photograph, you know, that you always have.
Very easy, because once he knows a song, we just do it.
Yeah.
So if you can listen pure, if you can listen to the album, you know, from Spotify or wherever, last song on that album, you know, slow ballad, and funny, it's really, really simple song, you know, no need to have a charts, but I wrote a charts to how to develop so I can finish short as possible, you know. And then first time we play, I can see he's not looking at the charts, he's just playing by feel. So, it didn't go well.
All right, that's the end of part one. Stay tuned for part two with Tomo Fujita coming up soon. Thank you for tuning in to the Riff Raff.